The Spectator magazine combines incisive political commentary with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Stock up on your summer reading with a 12-week subscription, in print and online for just £12. Plus, we'll send you a copy of Spectator columnist Lionel Shriver's new book, The Motion of the Body Through Space, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/Lionel.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm John Connolly and I'm joined today by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Today was PMQs with Keir Starmer and Boris Johnson squaring off against each other across the dispatch boxes. The biggest cause of contention in today's contest was over the policy of children returning to schools because of the COVID pandemic. The government has said that not all pupils may return until at least September. Here's what they had to say on the subject.
Millions of children will miss 6 months' worth of schooling and inequality will now go up. Several weeks ago, I suggested to the Prime Minister that we set up a national task force so everybody could put their shoulder to the wheel. It's not too late. Will the Prime Minister take me up on this?
We've tried to agree a way forward, which he's then seemed to deviate from later on. Last week he was telling the House that it was not yet safe for kids to go back to school. This week he's saying that not enough kids are going back to school. I really think he needs to make up his mind.
James, to start us off, do you think maybe that Keir Starmer's position was a bit weak here on schools coming back after sort of Labour have been quite reluctant for children to return at this stage?
Well, I think today was another reminder that PMQs between Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer is becoming quite personal quite quickly. Boris Johnson implicitly accused Keir Starmer of ratting on a deal on schools. Keir Starmer told Boris Johnson to stop trying to hide behind other people to excuse his own failures. Now, I can see why Boris Johnson thinks his attack line works, that, you know, Labour have sounded hesitant about kids going back to school and are now saying, why aren't more kids going back to school? I mean, the problem for the government is that there are some issues on which parents trying to juggle work and homeschooling their children, they're not following the twists and turns of the Westminster debate about this. They're just like, why haven't the government got the schools open? And I mean, that's the issue and the problem for the government is for those 8 million families with school-aged children right now, you know, they are just getting frustrated by the fact that the government hasn't managed to get the schools open. And I think another problem for the government is that as other things open up, people get more frustrated that those things are opening up, but not schools. So, you know, the government is reopening zoos as of next week because zoos are largely outside. Indoor bits of zoos are going to stay shut, and we all know that the virus spreads less easily outdoors. But you can already hear from parents, lots of parents saying, well, if zoos can open, why not schools? I'd much rather take my child to school than to the zoo. And I think this is the problem for the government, that because until the schools are opened up again, it is going to be such a problem for parents that you are just going to see the government being kind of bombarded with criticism on this point.
And Katie, we saw sort of Keir Starmer make the point and sort of, or maybe draw a comparison between, for example, the Nightingale hospitals and the efforts that were made there to make sure that we had spare capacity in our NHS and the sort of the I think it's fair to say, but slightly more lackluster efforts to get schools open. Do you think that's a fair comparison? And do you think, you know, some of this is down maybe to the effort of the government?
Well, I think you can compare it and say more effort has been made in a drastic way in hospitals. I think it's a slightly unfair comparison because clearly there's a huge price of educational inequality. But I do think if you rewind the hands of time, you can say they should have done both. But the immediate threat of the NHS being overwhelmed, there not being enough hospital beds, I think probably did feel like it was a priority over plans to get schools back. I think that where it is fair is that there doesn't feel to have been the same level of pushing for this. But I think the comparison, which I think is the most damaging, is not so much, oh, the government prioritised building hospitals over building potentially more space for schools, but actually the government, as of Monday, you know, we are opening betting shops, theme parks are going to be open soon, zoos, I think there was a question as, should we be pushing ahead with lots of non-essential retail when actually at the same time we're not able to get a lot of children back to school given the overall cost in terms of child's education, what it means for the inequality divide in this country, and also what it means for the economy. You can open all the shops. You know, if people can't go to work, if people are with their children having to ultimately become some form of teacher to keep things going, I think you're not going to get the level of spend that you actually would want from those measures. So I think that's where I think the optics can look quite bad for the government. It's clearly complicated, though, with the R number, given that's how the government view everything. There is space in different things to move, and a decision has been made to focus on non-essential retail for the next step, rather than schools. Now, James writes about it in the magazine this week, so I leave him to go into more detail here. There are questions in terms of what you can actually do in terms of the Public Health England advice and what space there is. I mean, one thing is bubbles, but I also get the sense that there are some in government who really view the 2 metre rule as a sticking point in how you bring pupils back to schools, you know, so many at once. And it was interesting today that when Boris Johnson was asked about the 2 metre rule, he seemed to be suggesting that even though the scientific advice wasn't changed, he was suggesting there is a scientific logic, which is if there are fewer infections in the country, there's clearly a lower risk at standing a bit closer to someone. So I think if we start to see movement on 2 metres, that is a game changer in terms of lots of things, in terms of what you can do and what businesses actually even choose to take up the relaxation of restrictions in terms of being allowed to open. I think if there is a 2 metre rule, there are some businesses that just don't know how they're going to be able to turn a profit. And I also think it's a factor in schools.
Yeah, James, how much of an impact do you think that would make on schools? And do you think we're heading in that direction then as well?
I mean, the biggest problem in schools is the size of the bubble, right? So at the moment, the government has set a bubble size of 15. So essentially, within that bubble of 15, you don't have to observe social distancing. So kids can be closer together than 2 metres. Now, that bubble is set at 15, but the average primary class size in England is 27. Now, you do the maths, John. Like, that means that you need twice as much space to educate the same number of kids as you did before. If you wanted to get schools back quickly, the biggest single change you can make would be to increase the size of the bubble. Now, for the reasons KB said, they don't want to increase the size of the bubble because they fear about the effect on the R number. And they have this process that towards the R number of basically trying to do one measure at a time so they can see what effect that measure has. But if you look at the evidence from other European countries that have brought schools back, I think you could be fairly confident of increasing the bubble without having a major impact on the R number.
And in other parts of PMQs, the issue of the Black Lives Matter protests was also brought up. Katie, did you get a sense that Boris was trying to strike a difficult balance here? And he was sort of talking about backing our police, but also sort of sympathy with the protests there.
Yeah, I think there was an effort to strike a balance. And I think you could see that in some of the language. But it was also the case that Boris Johnson was reiterating the line you've heard from the government, which I think is just like, you could say toughening is also that circumstances have changed, but talking about, you know, the fact that if people do commit crimes, you know, vandalism, acts of vandalism, he wants to see justice done there. And I think if you're looking at the government's general approach, I think where they have felt that they are making the points that they want to make is actually if you look back to the Home Secretary Priti Patel's statement in the chamber, where she hit back at some of the general, I think, attack lines coming from the Labour benches on the government's attitude to structural racism. So I think you can see Boris Johnson trying to have a balanced approach. Also, you saw it in the article he wrote, or the statement he gave to The Voice, in which he talked about how he has sympathy, how there was injustice and there is inequality in society, racial inequality. But again, going back to this tough on justice line. So the government is trying to pair an acceptance that society as it is does have problems on this with the sense that they're pushing again the idea that they are tough on law and order. And I think that's the act they're trying to get across.
And we saw James, Boris sort of getting pushed on the recommendations made after Windrush and the Lammy report. Do you think we're going to keep coming back to this? And do you sort of think the government's done enough on this to sort of deflect criticism, perhaps?
Yeah, I think one of the problems is that lots of the stuff that you do to make a difference on racial inequality is inherently a slow process. You are not going to see change overnight. But I think what often gets lost in this debate is But this country, I think, has far less of a problem with racism than it did 50 years ago, than it did 40 years ago, than it did 30 years ago, than it did 20 years ago, even than it did 10 years ago. So there is progress. Now, I completely understand why people feel that that progress is not fast enough, but there is progress. And I think that is one of the difficult things for the government, to get across the argument that you know, things have got better, but that doesn't mean you think things are good enough. And that's always inherently quite a difficult argument to make. I also think that there is a kind of inherent complication here, because the protests clearly can't be abiding by social distancing at all times. That's not possible. And there is obviously a violent element to these protests. And so the government have got another challenge there, which is, you know, how do you try and separate out the benign intent from the troublemakers? And so I think that, you know, but it is hard. But I also think there is a particular challenge here, which is the government don't want to sound complacent, but race relations are the best they have been in Britain, I would say. Certainly better than they were in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, even within this century.
And in terms of other challenges, Katie, I think Boris Johnson was also asked to defend Donald Trump, and he sort of mounted maybe like a half-hearted defence, would you say? Do you think that's significant as well?
Look, it's tricky for the government because they don't want to criticise Donald Trump. There's a view that no matter what you think of that person, it's never a good idea as a governing party to criticise the leader of a country you need to have a strong relationship with. You know, I had someone in government say to me, like, look, our language could change in November, depending on what happens. But if Donald Trump is still president, I don't think the language is going to change. So I think it is difficult, though, because I think if people are looking at what's happening in America, I think it is an easy attack line for Labour to say, you are not criticising the US president when look at XXX. But I just don't think it's something which they are going to go near while that person is the president, and there's a chance they're going to keep being the president for several years to come.
I thought Boris Johnson's answer was incredibly revealing. Because when he was basically asked what good qualities Donald Trump has, he basically said he's the president of the United States. He was essentially saying his quality is that he holds that office, and that office matters to the UK because the US is such a close ally. It was, you know, all these people, I saw people saying on, obviously Twitter is not Britain and all that. People saying on Twitter, not a word of criticism. I thought that was the most damning Boris Johnson has been of Donald Trump, because he basically didn't say anything nice about Trump at all. He just said, look, the guy holds that job, and that job matters to this country.
Brilliant. Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening.
The Spectator magazine combines incisive political commentary with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Stock up on your summer reading with a 12-week subscription, in print and online, for just £12. Plus, we'll send you a copy of Spectator columnist Lionel Shriver's new book, The Motion of the Body Through Space, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/Lionel.